Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, November 14th, 2013. I wish I had about 6 hours for this show tonight. It is so packed with information. This week, Comet Ison turned blue. Now, I talked about that last week on my show, and independent observations verified this. And what you look for, very subtly, now it doesn't turn blue like a blue color, because you have to understand it's adding blue to the green that's already there. This is a spectral analysis, and so I'm going to be talking about that, about blue comets. I talked a number of weeks ago about blue comets, and the situation is as follows. The comet is giving off a lot of white light, which is reflected solar light. On top of that, you have the light which is generated from the luminosity, from the electron beam that's passing through the comet per my plasma discharge comet model. The certain elements, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, water, many of the elements are there, are fluorescing in the typical colors that we get out of a comet that is a bit lower energy is green. Comet Ison turned green when it interacted with Mars. I reported that before. Now that it was starting to get closer to the sun and then interacting with Mercury, it turned blue. And now, like I say, it doesn't just turn a blue color like a blue pen. You put blue on top of the green, so what you see is kind of, in fact, there was a bit of even purplish in it, if you know what to look for, but it takes a trained eye to understand what to look for. So it's a blue mixed with the green that was already there, because the green doesn't go away. That's still going on. And it's a spectrum which, you're adding components of light to the already existing spectrum that's there. So it turned kind of a bluish green, very noticeable. Also, the light curves that are should be produced by NASA, but of course are not made public, would show that the lines. Now I have a picture of this of Hayakutake, comet Hayakutake spectrum in my comet ebook. So if you have that book, look in there and you'll see the spectrum of Comet Hayakutake from 1996. And you'll see on the one side of the spikes, the identifying spectral spikes for various chemical elements, on one side you'll see it curved, kind of an exponential curve. That's the redshift. If you had that same spectrum, not associated with a comet, but coming out of, say, a tube in a laboratory, those spikes would be nice and clearly defined and narrow and on both sides. But what happens is, due to the electrical charge on the comet nucleus, this per my plasma discharge comet model, you will see that. Now, if you had good equipment like the Hubble Space Telescope and were looking with a spectrometer at a very specific portion or spot in the comet coma, the cloud that surrounds the nucleus, you would find a very specific redshift, because it varies from distance, varies according to distance from the comet nucleus. By the way, I get a kick out of, there's a lot of Tier 1 scientists who listen to this show, and they have picked up a lot of tips from me, so to speak, over the years. Some have come out and talked to me personally. But they, of course, understand this. The Tier 2 science, the NASA guys who think they're the top layer of science but aren't, don't, of course, understand this. They think they're looking at a little puffy snowball. And these oddities in the spectrum, they just kind of gloss over. By the way, this week I saw also posted on the NASA page, they released the first X-ray pictures of Comet Ison. It's very intense in X-rays. So at any rate, I'll be talking a bit more about that, about blue comets and why they appear the way they do and what to look for. Okay, well, there's a just a boatload of things that have happened this week. First of all, let me review my two new releases. If you haven't heard about these, the Japanese DVD, What the Japanese Want to Know About Planet X, is now out for release, and I believe it's $13.95 plus $3, $2.80 shipping for one, and for $25 you get two of them. Also, I'm pre-releasing my new Christmas release. You can buy that one or two at a time. And that's available, I think, for $19.95, or you can get two of them for $36. But also, if you buy more than $295 worth of any of the items on the webpage, including ebooks, you would get these two new releases free. So at any rate, check it out. Also, if you're looking for presents, remember the calendar on my webpage, the emergency survival recalendar, sun star clock, things like the pre-filter. Okay, I'm going to cut all of that out because I don't have time for that, but just go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and that helps out on this commercial-free radio show also. So, okay, I got a kick out of spaceweather.com this week. There's five comets up in the sky that are visible with modest equipment, one of them visible to the naked eye. But spaceweather.com, the mouthpiece for NASA, is telling everybody, don't look over there at that comet Ison by the planet Mercury. Well, they're not saying it's by the planet Mercury. They're ignoring that completely. But they're saying, look up at this comet Lovejoy. It's up by the North Pole. They are trying to direct everybody's observational attention up to the North Pole, where Comet Lovejoy happens to be, and that's a fairly big comet too, a fairly energetic comet. Just a quick posting. By the way, I had thought this was comical too, that NASA, even on its official Comet Ison webpage, is only posting amateur photos. Where is all of the NASA photos? Over 60 NASA telescopes and instruments trained on Comet Ison, and NASA is posting amateur photos and going, gee, isn't that swell? Look at this wonderful photo. Gee, NASA, I don't buy it. Nobody else does out there either. Where is the data from the good equipment that we're paying for, the spectrum, the spectral analysis with the good equipment? Where are the photos from the Hubble Space Telescope of Comet Ison showing its sunward spike? None of these amateur photos show any detail. In fact, they track the stars, not the comet. So you see this fuzzy, out-of-focus picture of the comet. Oh, it's just disgusting. The criminal aspect of what's going on, the hiding of data, and the scientists that are partaking in this, it's really disgusting. Okay. Typhoon Haiyan, last week there was a lot of chatter on the internet that it was caused by man-made, or some people saying it was caused by Ison. No, it was not caused by Comet Ison. Comet Ison is very remote from Earth. There have not been any major solar conditions coming towards Earth that would... Typhoon Haiyan... I don't have any data that would suggest that it was manipulated. It may have been. All of these storms could be. But of what I have seen people presenting, I do not see anything that suggests that it was manipulated. Of course, these are all spawned and powered from electrical currents from above. So you do get signatures of various types around the typhoons if you look in various types of data, including also for hurricanes. So you do see those signatures of energy. The question is, are these manipulated or are they natural phenomena? And basically typhoons and hurricanes are powered from energetic electrical currents that are passing down from the ionosphere. Ultimately, that energy is coming from the electric field around Earth that is caused by the sun. The question is anybody helping that out, that natural energy? Remember that weather manipulation is not creating weather. You are simply helping the natural energy sources that already exist. You're helping them trigger. Okay, so at any rate, also quickly an announcement. Ho-hum, NASA has a probe going out to Mars, and they're going to search for answers for what happened to Mars, caused it to be lose its Earth-like properties of oceans and water. Gee, NASA, we're all waiting with bated breath to, for your probe to go out to the Mars so you can tell us that billions of years ago NASA had an ocean and it was, you know, what are they looking for? We know what caused Mars to lose its ocean. The ancients tell us. It's in the texts. Mars was a blue planet in historical times, just like Earth. It lost its oceans and atmosphere to a large passing comet that eventually became the planet Venus. That's what happened. So ho-hum, NASA, send your probe, send it out there, spend a few years waiting for it to get there, and then come back and report that it was billions of years ago that Mars lost its atmosphere. What a pile of you-know-what. In this world today, you have to have really high hip boots to put up with all the baloney. By the way, I just wanted to include this in a show. You cannot go to a YouTube video today without seeing some yo-yo, Johnny Wannabe, come out and talk about electric universe or, gee, all kinds of things related to comets or comet ice on, and just people obviously copying my work. One clown goes, comets, you can think of them as a capacitor. Oh, gee, that's sure original. In fact, they can't even copy it right. Comets of themselves are not capacitors. Comets of themselves are not electric. The clowns that are out there saying, oh, the electric comet theory. No, that's just a funny name trying to copy my work, doing a bad job of it, by the way. Because they can't, they don't dare use my plasma discharge comet model, so they have to fudge it a little bit, like they do with everything, and call it an electric comet. Well, a comet doesn't have electrical properties on its own. It's not an electrical thing on its own. A comet is electrical because of very subtle plasma conditions that are in the solar system. And at any rate, I wanted to read this from a paper that I published originally 1979 from my work back in the 70s. But the clowns that have come along in 2005 and beyond claiming electric universe and all kinds of things. These, you know, if you look at these people, they're charlatans, they're con artists. All they've ever done is come in, Johnny come lately, when, you know, let me put it this way. Back in the Cornell days when I was at Cornell and hammering directly right there on NASA scientists face to face, where were those clowns? They were sleeping in Grandma's basement. Some of them weren't even born yet. In the 1980s when I was going to American Geophysical Union meetings and confronting NASA scientists directly face-to-face in those meetings, where were all the electric universe clowns? Sleeping in Grandma's basement. You know, they come along in 2005 after I've hammered and hammered on this issue for decades, when the popularity, when the notoriety finally gets out to the vast majority of people in the world, these guys come riding in for the profit. So I want to read this. This is from a paper, actually was published in the Velikovsky and Journal Kronos, I believe this is part 3, summary, page 50. Anyway, I'm going to read two paragraphs. It says, this is me writing in 1979, it says, questions still remain concerning the birth for Venus, implying the comet Venus becoming a planet. They said, but there is mounting evidence suggesting that Venus is indeed a youthful planet. and it could very well have been the comet of the ancients that Velikovsky identified and discussed in World in Collisions. Remember, I'm sticking this right in the face of NASA scientists as I'm at Cornell University. Okay, then it says catastrophic bandwagon has formed in astronomy, geology, evolutionary biology, and related fields, but with no credit given to Velikovsky. And here's the line I want you to listen to. Here is the line directly out of my paper, and then I popularized this term over the succeeding years and decades. It says, this is my writing, has data and observation pointed towards an electric universe? There, my friends, is the term and origin of the term, popularization of the term electric universe. Now, of course, people in history have identified things, looked for electrical conditions, pointed them out, Birkeland currents, Hans Alvin, who worked with electrical conditions, observations in the solar system, primarily observational, and did some basic theoretical work, won a Nobel Prize. Certainly, Einstein worked around the concept of unified fields, combining the various types of field into one unified theory. All of these people had worked in this, but when I came along, what I did was monumental in that I identified all of the various components of electricity in the solar system and in galaxies. And so the non-uniform distribution of protons in the solar wind that caused the capacitor, that the comets discharge this capacitor and become electrically charged, they're the discharge of the solar capacitor, and all the physics involved in that, the Earth weather, which is also related to Earth's discharge of the solar capacitor, the fact that the surface fusion of the sun, the fusion of the sun is at the surface, proven by Russian scientists. Where were all the electric universe clowns out there when this was going on? No place to be found. Nope. When the notoriety and profits come in, then they come riding in to reap their profits. That's a bunch of opportunists. That's what's going on. So, like I say, there's hundreds of YouTube videos, new electric universe clowns out there jumping up and down trying to get a piece of my pie, ride my wave is what's going on. Anyway, okay, enough of that. A lot of important information to talk about tonight. Okay, so I talked about the typhoon in the Atlantic. Four topics I want to cover tonight. There was a power outage in London this past week. Let me grab the information. It came from the Daily Mail and a daily newspaper from London. So let me read directly from the, and I want to read this whole article. I'm going to read it quickly, so listen carefully. It says, power cut brings capital to standstill. This is from the Daily Mail, a London newspaper. And look at that. They're saying a power cut. They're not saying a power outage. They're saying power cut. They're saying that someone cut the power. Okay, so anyway, here is the article directly from London. This has happened last week. It says, London's mayor called for an inquiry after a massive power cut. They use the word cut again. This is not a power outage, something that God created or act of God, something out of our control. They're saying someone did this. They know someone did this. Okay, it says, London's mayor called for an inquiry after a massive power cut caused unprecedented disruption to 250,000 people trying to get home during the London rush hour. So this is at the end of the day last week. It said, a national grid failure caused hundreds of traffic lights to fail and both mainline and underground trains to come to a sudden halt, leaving thousands of passengers stuck in tunnels. Can you imagine London without traffic lights? Oh my goodness. Okay. Then it says, when power was finally restored and the transportation network got moving again, many office workers had given up hope and were spending the evening and night in pubs and bars. Network Rail spokesperson Kevin Grove said passengers were stuck in trains for around an hour and a half before they got moving again. because of congestion. Can you imagine being stuck like a sardine in a London underground subway for an hour and a half, not knowing when those doors are going to open, when that train is going to move again? Oh, my goodness. Okay, here he said there is still severe disruption, and that will continue for the rest of the night. As Londoners queued for buses, London Underground said it hoped to be able to run normal service by morning. So the Londoners had to go above ground, the ones that could get above ground, and try and find buses to get home. London Mayor Ken Livingstone released a statement calling for an inquiry into the power failure. He said, "It is totally unacceptable that this happened, affecting at least 250,000 people as well as the transport system. Under investigation is the national grid must be not be allowed to cause this kind of chaos in a city like London. The event demands the fullest inquiry to ensure it does not happen again in the future." Okay, well, gee, boys and girls, I wonder who pulled this grid on, the power on this deal. But they love to pull the power, and this is what I've been talking about for a long time. Stockton, California, the first day of yesterday, the power NERC power outage simulation, 100,000 people out of power in Stockton, California, the Pacific Gas and Electric Company. Spokesperson said the cause was still under investigation, but added that the blackout was believed to be related to large transmission lines or electrical substations. It says engineers are working on the cause right now. It would be premature to speculate. Okay, but they don't know. They had no clue what caused this. Now, gee, just happened to have happened during the NERC power outage. Isn't that coincidental? Okay. I love this one. The IRS shut down from November 9th to 12th due to a power outage, but they announced it before it happened. They said, "We're going to have a power outage, and so you won't be able to get into the computer facilities of the IRS." Isn't that interesting? By the way, this in from a couple weeks ago when the government shut down, the IRS part that collects money did not shut down. The part of the IRS that that goes out and helps people and gives money back and returns did shut down. Isn't that interesting? Boy, I sure want to be part of the government medical program. Oh, my goodness, what a disaster. The government doesn't even know if it's going to be operational, and they want you to sign up for their insurance program for your health. Oh, my goodness. Okay, let me see what else here. President Obama signed two executive orders recently, one of them where the dealing with the presidential proclamation Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience Order. Now, this is something I announced before. Obama made a proclamation, a speech, a very definite reference to power outages and cyber attacks, and that the government has to reinforce our position. But the other issue is that the government, here's the problem. All of this would be wonderful and something you would expect the government to do if you trusted the government. But we have a government that is owned by European bankers, operated and managed from overseas. Obama is just middle management. So when you see these people doing this, it causes one to have great concern. So anyway, Obama made a speech, and it basically called for November, and I announced this before, November is Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience Month. Wow. And little Obama, and then here's the one that is really scary. There's another one, an executive order. There's two executive orders. One is where Obama is preparing by executive order for the United States impacts on climate change. And you know what they're after here? They're after your water. They're after control of all of the infrastructure in the United States. So all of this is pointing towards government, federal government control of all infrastructure. And then finally, here is the executive order, 2013-27166, extending Obama's, starting on November 14th, his prior annual executive order making him President Emeritus Maximus, I call it, in charge of everything. He extended this for another year starting, November 14th. So here's the Federal Registry, Volume 78, Number 218, Tuesday, November 12th, 2013, Presidential Directive 2013-27166. And basically, here's what it says. Continuation of the national emergency with respect to proliferation of weapons of mass destruction on November 14th by Executive Order 12913, that was the previous executive order, the President declared a national emergency with respect to the unusual and extraordinary threat of national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States posed by the proliferation of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons of mass destruction and the means of delivering such weapons. And so this extends all the way back to 1998. So he is simply renewing the National Emergencies Act. It says, this is Obama talking, I am continuing for 1 year the national emergency declared in Executive Order 12938 as amended. And then this was transmitted and published in the Federal Registry and transmitted to Congress, signed by President Obama, November 7th, 2013. Once again, Federal Registry document 2013-27166. I made this announcement on Dr. Bill Deagle's show on Monday, and we were talking about these executive orders that, in fact, are coming down and extending at a time when the national power outage we're expecting, and I've been predicting this for a long time. NASA's involved in it by predicting that the sun has the potential to take out our power grid, and that's true. I've been on Coast to Coast talking about this. I'm one of the main proponents. I was talking about it long before NASA ever got on its high horse. But you have to put the caveat in there that the sun is right now at the lowest energetic level in 200 years. So that's why I've talked about Comet Isan being a direct cause of solar flaring. Not that Comet Isan is going to cause solar flares that are going to take out our power grid. That's a possibility, but a remote one. But the issue is that the solar flares would be used for a false flag event to take down the power grid. And so you notice that the little clown government copycats out there trying to copy my statements about Comet Isan leave out that little caveat that the Comet Isan sure could cause some solar flaring, but the end result is that that flaring could be used as a false flag event, a cause, an act of God, so to speak, that the sun did it. At the same time, you have the Tier 2 outreach, Tier 3 outreach people of NASA talking about their belief that comets do not affect the sun. So they have this two-pronged misinformation campaign. NASA saying that the sun could send out a flare that could obliterate our power grid. We have all of these executive orders and executive proclamations and the NERC power outage simulation that is ending today. And all of these conditions, it is very, all of the meters, as I said on the Joyce Riley show, I said if you took a big board of meters, like dials with meters on them. I said all of these meters are off scale, pointing towards this country. You have Janet Napolitano making announcements, head of Homeland Security, that we are in for an imminent power outage due to natural disasters and cyber attacks. Get ready, folks, because they're going to do this. The nutcases that are running this planet are about to pull the plug. And I don't know when it's going to happen. Obviously, the 13th and 14th, yesterday and today, were the beginning of the time frame when they're getting ready to do this. So that's all I can tell you is be prepared. Don't get caught like the Londoners stuck in a subway with 100 other people in a subway car with the doors not opening. Wow. Oh, can you imagine that what's going through your mind? You're stuck in a London subway train that stops. You're in a tunnel. The train ain't moving, and you're there for an hour and a half. And you think, we're going to die here. That's what you're thinking. We're all going to die and smell. Well, okay, I won't go into that. But that's what's going through these people's minds. But that's what they want. They want fear in the public. That's what they want. I like the expression from the movie V. The government should fear the citizens. The citizens should not be in fear of the government. Oh, another thing that came up this past week, as a listener informed me, I get this a lot of this directly from the internet, from the people who have informed me directly. And I should make a comment that if things are posted on the internet, typically I'll probably not talk about them on this show. But I have contacts from around the world. I had contacts from London regarding the power outage there. I had contacts from California. And this came in from a contact in California that by the Golden Gate Bridge, there's a tunnel, a passage, and there was a sign on it a number of days ago, saying that there would be a dark tunnel on the 13th and 14th of November. Dark tunnel meaning that the lights would not be on. And isn't it interesting that the Stockton power outage happened at about the same time? So very interesting. What's going on there? Just a bit of investigative reporting from direct contacts. Just a quick comment. For years, the people who support a lot of my detractors and support the electric universe nutcases out there that are trying to copy my work, for years they've been trying to egg me on into some kind of either verbal or legal assault and conflagration with these entities. And I don't do those kind of things. And I'll tell you why. It burns up my energy, which I don't have. I have to direct my energy on the projects I'm working on. I'm very busy in the background working on positive work. And so what keeps me going is I'm way ahead of the curve on everything that's going on. So what you see, the people that are copying me, they're copying things that I did last year or 2 years ago or 4 years ago. That's what they're doing, copying me now, or maybe even last week. With YouTube, people can put up videos and take what I said a few weeks ago and twist it. But they'd love to see me get into some kind of either verbal or legal or some other kind of conflict with all of these people. And I'll just make it clear, I work by myself, I've always worked by myself, I've never worked for government contracts or government agencies. The work I did in the telecommunications industry was with private companies, dealing with the largest private companies in the world and their telecommunications needs. And so I'm a person that's worked independently all of my career, half of my career teaching at the university level, astronomy, physics, mathematics, and computer science. And I don't need to have conflicts with little peons out there. So anyway, that's enough of that. But I just wanted to let you know that this is constant. absolutely constant with people trying to badger me or whatever it is. And I don't bite on that. I'm sorry. So at any rate, on to the main science topic here. I'm going to be talking about blue comets, and we have one up there. We actually have a couple of them up there now. Comet Linear is a green comet. Comet Lovejoy is showing, exhibiting faint colors of green. But Comet Ison is the true green comet of the solar system right now. But this past week, it started exhibiting bluish tinges in its color. And so I wanted to go into this a number of weeks ago, and I don't remember which week, I talked about blue comets. And remember that the Hopi Indians talked about blue comets as the dangerous ones. Because they could look up in the sky and see the blue comets. Those are the energetic comets. Those are the ones with a lot more energy flowing through them. And that action at a distance affects on planet Earth, our weather systems. And these people experienced that. Last week I read from the Colburn, one of the devastating Earth effects of a planet X type object. And that's one thing that's clear from the Colburn, the real Colburn. Make sure you get it from the Chaldean Trust, the K-O-L-B-R-I-N. Don't buy the one on Amazon. It's the imitation version with a lot of misinformation. Don't get it there. But the Colburn is very clear about the fact that there were many Planet X-type objects that affected Earth. Very clearly, they talk about the Venus event. But remember the Great Flood. Now, if you look on my 18 hours... set, it's called The Physics of Ancient Celestial Disasters. 18 hours of lectures. It's an amazing CD set. That'd be another great Christmas present for people. But on there, I identify the Noah event, the Great Flood of Noah. And this is talked about worldwide, happened thousands of years prior to the Venus event. Those are two comet events. Major effects on planet Earth, and very different. Obviously, the Noah event, we were far out in the comet tail and spent about a month passing through the comet tail. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And remember that when we enter, say that we had an event now where we entered a comet tail for a month, the same thing would happen. The temperature would plummet. We would have rain for a month or more at a time. The water influx from the huge comet tail. We would become part of a comet. We would literally become a comet with that influx of water. This is why it's so important to understand in my plasma discharge comet model that the material in the tail is coming into the comet nucleus. Remember that the small little comets that we see today, the comet does not have enough gravitational force. Once the ions come in and become neutralized by that electron cloud that's around the nucleus, once the ions come in and become neutralized, they just float out with the solar wind. And that's what comet scientists at NASA misidentify in the comet probes that they've sent out into the tail region of comets. They see that what they call neutrals coming out. And yeah, they're floating out from the sun, but they don't understand. They're looking in the wrong direction because the majority of tail flow is coming into the nucleus. Okay, and so the point here is that the big comets, like Venus when it came through, or Earth when it connected into the Noah's comet, into the tail, we become a comet also and have all of these comet-like characteristics. Including in the Noah event, a great amount of influx of water. And so the Great Flood, obviously an event from a comet. But the Colburn is very clear. There were multiple big comet events in the history that go back thousands and tens of thousands of years, probably within the past 10,000 years. And these records, they talk about it. As if you listen to my show last week, I talked. I was reading directly from the Colburn. They said most of the records of these events have been lost, and so that's a fact that the majority of records have been lost regarding these, and so that's why it's so important that the few records that do come down to us, that you understand these people were trying to warn us in the future. Every civilization talks about these, but the Hopi Indians talk about the blue comets being the dangerous ones, and the Hopi, their legends go back into history. When I did the History Channel special a year ago, that was airing actually last November, it was filmed the May before, 2012, filmed that, and then the Japanese special were filmed a couple months apart in the summer of 2012. And I was in every part of the six-part series, Countdown to Armageddon, in the History Channel special. But my part in there was dealing with the Hopi Indians, the legends of the Hopis. And one of the main characteristics is that they talk about the ancient comets and the blue ones being the dangerous ones. And right now we have a blue comet up in the sky. It's called Comet Ison. Comet Ison is far away from us. It's not. We're not going to go through the tail. It's not Nibiru. It doesn't have a cloud of planets surrounding it. None of that baloney that is put out by the misinformation crew, a lot of it trying to implicate me in such statements. Clearly not the case, because as I tell people, listen to this radio show, listen to me on bona fide interviews with other long-term talk show hosts, and read my web page, read my books. That's where you find out what Jim McCanny is saying. But the blue comets, let's talk about the blue ones. Okay, let's talk about spectral analysis in general. Spectral analysis. Let's take a test tube full of the type of gases that you find in a comet tail. Let's take a test tube and fill it full of that gas, and then we're going to put an electrode on each side of that test tube. It's an evacuated vacuum test tube with just the rarefied gases, just like you would find them in a comet tail, and then put an electrode on each side in that glass tube and run an electric current through there, an electric current like a neon light bulb. And what you're going to get is the spectral lines of the elements, the chemicals, the chemical elements that are in that tube. Okay, so let's do this. Let's start out with a very low amount of electrical current. You're going to start to see with your eyes, with your visible eyes, you're going to start to see reddish colors, because our eyes only see from the far infrared up very near the red colors. Into the reds, we can see reds, and then our eyes jump up very quickly. And these are the daytime colors. These are the daytime colors. Remember, animals can see in the infrared. Your cat and dog see things at night that you don't see. Fish see things that you don't see, because they're seeing in the infrared. They have to see in a different electromagnetic part of the electromagnetic spectrum, because they have different requirements. Possibly humans a long time ago had better vision in the infrared. Remember that we have receptors in our eyes that see at night, but you look off to the side. If you're looking at the stars at night, look off to the side and you'll see them better. That's because our receptors for night are different in different locations in our eyes. Okay, so take our test tube. You're running a very modest electrical current, and it starts to glow red. Okay, now let's increase the current. Okay, what's next? Okay, you're going to start to see a bit of orange. Then yellows. Yellows are the more energetic lights that come next. Then green. Okay, stop there. Now you're seeing, but remember, there's the reds are still there, the yellows and the oranges are still there, but they're dominated by the green because the majority of light coming out of this of the gas in the test tube are in the green part of the spectrum. But don't forget, the reds and the oranges are there also, but not as intense. And then the spectral curve drops off, and there's a little bit of blue, a little bit of violet, a little bit of ultraviolet in there, but not very much, a very, very small amount. And so what you're seeing, the majority color you're seeing is green. Now let's move the electron beam up to a higher intensity moving through that our test tube. And by the way, these, when you do an analysis, if you took a spectrometer that broke the light into its component parts, you would see the fine lines of the various types of chemicals in there, especially the ones that glow in green, because that's the energy that's coming into them with the electron current at the current energy level that the electron current is passing through our sample test tube. So the green light is coming off. Any of those atoms or molecules in there that fluoresce in green are going to be the most activated with that amount of light. Okay, and the if you took the light and put it through a spectrometer, you would break this apart into its respective components, and the lines, the spectral lines to identify the various types of chemicals in there would be very narrow on both sides, and that's important. Remember that point as we move farther into this discussion. In the test tube in the laboratory, those lines are very narrow. And so, because we're going to use the same spectrometer to look at a comet. Okay, now let's increase the energy flowing through that test tube just a bit, and all of a sudden you start to see some blues. The maximum peak in that spectrum, that energy spectrum, is in the blue region. So you start to see blues, but it's mixed with greens and yellows and oranges and reds to a lesser degree, but they're still there. So what you're doing is you're putting blue on top of the other colors. So what you're seeing is a combination color. It's not blue as if you picked up a blue marker pen and it's a nice blue color. No, it's a combination of blue with the greens, with the oranges, with the reds, all of those to a lesser degree, but they're all in there. So the blue, you have to have a very discerning eye, an educated eye, to understand that it's a bluish tinge added on to the other colors. And so that's what we're seeing in Comet Ison. The pictures, I've got my own private sources, and also the pictures that were published on the internet show the same exact thing. Comet Ison this week developed two tails, and I'll be talking a little bit about two tails in a minute. Why two tails? Well, actually, it's a very common aspect of comets. Comet Lovejoy right now has three tails. And many comets, Comet Hale-Bopp, had as many as 14 tails. The ancient comet Venus, the ancients talk about the snake-like tails of Comet Venus that were flailing around the sky as this monster comet. And I talked about monster comets last week, how they look. They don't look like this docile little, pretty little white cloud up in the sky. They look like a monster raging, zapping out electrical discharges at everything that comes within their path. So it looks like a hairy monster going around out there. And that's why in the Colburn, they're saying, this thing doesn't look like a comet. Well, no, it doesn't look like a normal comet because it's a raging big comet. That's why it looks like a monster. It doesn't. And they talk about these things fighting. There'll be two of them up in the sky at one time fighting, and then they become one as they join, these objects join as their orbits coincide and the two objects collide and become one raging, much larger raging comet. One is consumed by the other. The ancients are very clear. There were multiple big comets up in the sky at one time. Okay, so back to Comet Ison. Turning blue this week, And now, if you took your spectral analysis, if you took your spectrometer and trained it on the comet nucleus, what's the difference between looking at the spectrum? It's all the same gases. Remember, we took all the gases that would be in a comet tail, we put them in a test tube in the laboratory, looked at them with a spectrometer. Now you put them up in the comet, and you're looking at a comet from a distance with a telescope, and something very strange happens. The peak, the narrow lines that you saw in your laboratory for the individual elements, that narrow line broadens on one side, on the red side, on the lower frequency side of the less energetic side of that spike. It broadens. It doesn't broaden on the other side. It broadens on the red side. What's causing this? Well, back in my original work when I was at Cornell University, I realized, and there was data at the time, that showed, for example, that quasars were associated with galaxies. That data was just starting to come in from a guy named Halton Arp, and a guy who I communicated with back then. He was showing that quasars were associated with galaxies, just normal galaxies. You could see the strings attaching them, and you could see the strings in many different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum, in the ultraviolet, in the various other X-rays. You could see these connections between galaxies and quasars. And the standard scientific explanation was, the quasar was much farther, and this was just coincidence, but there were hundreds and hundreds of these so-called coincidences. Another scientist very vocal in this was, his name is Bainbridge, and there are many other scientists that are very vocal about the fact that the Big Bang concept and the concept that quasars with redshifts are at the far edge of the universe is totally incorrect. But what I did is I developed a theory that explained this. It's called the induced electric dipole redshift. And I'm not going to go into the explanation of this, but since comets are electrically charged, they are involved in the same process where light coming out from the nuclear region of a comet is redshifted. I remember back in the mid-1980s, a group of scientists went down to South America with good spectroscopic equipment and telescopes, and they were going to photograph Comet Halley. Well, they did, and they brought their data back, and all of the data was redshifted, and they couldn't understand it, so they threw the data out. Never got published. But it would have proven, at that point, my concept, which I had developed long before that, the induced electric dipole redshift, was active in comets. It would have proven that comets are electrical. It would have proven many aspects of comets, the plasma discharge comet model. So, at any rate, you can see this, and as I said, if you have my ebook Comets, if you don't have it, you better get it. But with all the comets going on in the solar system right now, it's on my webpage, available in the ebook format only. But in there is a plate that came from NASA of Comet Hyakutake from 1996, and that's when NASA started publishing any spectral analysis data of comets. But look in that book, that spectrum is there, and you'll see that on one side of the spike identifying points of the various chemicals in the spectrum of Hyakutake, on the one side, the identifying spectral spike is nice and straight and linear and vertical, and on the other side it's tapered off, and that's consistent with all of the various chemicals identified in Comet Hyakutake. And this would be the same with any comet. That light curve is distorted. It's stretched out towards the lower frequency end on the spectrum of comets. Now remember, in the laboratory that wouldn't be the case. So you have Tier 2 scientists looking directly at redshift data coming off of comets, and they ignore it. They sweep it under the rug. This is proof, number one, that the electric, my concept that induced electric dipole redshift is producing redshifts at comets, and number two, that comets are electrically charged, highly electrically charged. Which brings up another point, the first released data coming out of NASA of X-rays on Comet Ison came out this week, and Comet Ison is extremely active in the X-ray spectrum. And so this is amazing that how can a scientist that claims that a comet is an ice ball look at that data and say, well, it's that ice ball creating all those X-rays. But of course, NASA has its little pat answer for that. They call it charge exchange, a concept that, well, if it worked, why isn't it working at Earth? Why isn't it working at other planets? And the answer is that it isn't. It's not working at Earth. So why are comets so special? Why are these little ice balls so special that charge exchange works at those? But oddly enough, when you look at the necessity of charge exchange, it needs an electron current to kick it off. Isn't that interesting? Where does the dirty snowball come up with the electron current necessary to kick off charge exchange? Well, it doesn't. It's all a bunch of phony baloney. But that's what NASA needs to keep its dirty snowball. That's the band-aid it needs to keep its dirty snowball comet model going. Okay, I've just got a minute left here. Why do comets have two tails? Well, one tail is the dust and gases that are being drawn into the comet nucleus electrically. The other one is the electron beam that's coming out from the sun, passes by the comet nucleus, and keeps going for millions and millions of miles. Sometimes tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of miles. But that's the straight tail, and many times there are discharges that occur in that electron beam that's coming in. For example, the asteroid that went comet just last week, I announced, talked about that, had six tails. These are regions of the solar environment where a material is coming in and funneling in, and that's finally you get to see it when there's enough light, when there's enough of this material to produce enough light to actually see it. So yes, comets do have double tails. They can have up to 15 tails, 17 tails. By the way, remember to go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, 7 letters, JMCC. S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, and your purchases there help this commercial-free radio show continue bringing you this information, which I guarantee you don't find or hear anyplace else on this planet. And this just in, Comet Ison last night went 100 times brighter than it was the previous day. That's two orders of magnitude brighter than it was the previous day. And, of course, astronomers at NASA are dumbfounded. They can't explain why this is happening. I predicted it last week. I said when it interacts with the comet Ison with the planet Mercury, it would brighten greatly, and that just happened. That just in. I better get out of here. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.